It was with a lump in my throat that I watched the familiar shore draw nearer and nearer. I had landed in France 2 days before, transacted some necessary business, and was now en route for London. I should be there for some months. Time enough to look up old friends, and one old friend in particular, a little man with an egg-shaped head and green eyes, Hercule Poirot. I proposed to take him completely by surprise. My last letter from the Argentine had given no hint of my intended voyage. Indeed, that had been decided upon hurriedly as a result of certain business complications, and I spent many amused moments picturing to myself his delight and stupefaction on beholding me. He, I knew, was not likely to be far from his headquarters. The time when his cases had drawn him from one end of England to the other was past. His fame had spread, and no longer would he allow one case to absorb all his time. He aimed more and more, as time went on, at being considered a consulting detective, as much a specialist as a Harley Street physician. He had always scoffed at the popular idea of the human bloodhound, who assumed wonderful disguises to track criminals, and who paused at every footprint to measure it. "No, my friend Hastings," he would say, "we leave that to Giraud and his friends. Hercule Poirot's methods are his own. Order and method. And the little grey cells. Sitting at ease in our own armchairs, we see the things that these others overlook, and we do not jump to the conclusion, like the worthy Jap." No, there was little fear of finding Hercule Poirot far afield. On arrival in London, I deposited my luggage at an hotel and drove straight on to the old address. What poignant memories it brought back to me. I hardly waited to greet my old landlady, but hurried up the stairs two at a time and rapped on Poirot's door. "Enter, then," cried a familiar voice from within. I strode in. Poirot stood facing me. In his arms he carried a small valise, which he dropped with a crash on beholding me. "Mon ami Hastings," he cried, "mon ami Hastings," and rushing forward, he enveloped me in a capacious embrace. Our conversation was incoherent and inconsequent. Ejaculations, eager questions, incomplete answers, messages from my wife, explanations as to my journey, were all jumbled up together. "I suppose there's someone in my old rooms?" I asked at last, when we had calmed down somewhat. "I'd love to put up here again with you." Poirot's face changed with startling suddenness. "Mon Dieu! But what a chance épouvantable! Regarde around you, my friend." For the first time, I took note of my surroundings. Against the wall stood a vast arc of a trunk of prehistoric design. Near to it were placed a number of suitcases, ranged neatly in order of size, from large to small. The inference was unmistakable. "You are going away?" "Yes. Where to?" "South America." "What?" "Yes, it is a droll farce, is it not? It is to Rio I go. And every day I say to myself, I will write nothing in my letters, but, oh, the surprise of the good Hastings when he beholds me! But when are you going?" Poirot looked at his watch. "In an hour's time." "I thought you always said nothing would induce you to make a long sea voyage." Poirot closed his eyes and shuddered. "Speak not of it to me, my friend. My doctor, he assures me that one dies not of it, and it is for the one time only. You understand that never... never shall I return." He pushed me into a chair. "Come, I will tell you how it all came about. Do you know who is the richest man in the world? Richer even than Rockefeller? Abe Ryland."
"Oh, the American soap king."
"Precisely. One of his secretaries approached me. There is some very considerable, as you would call it, hocus-pocus, going on in connection with a big company in Rio. He wished me to investigate matters on the spot. I refused. I told him that if the facts were laid before me, I would give him my expert opinion. But that he professed himself unable to do. I was to be put in possession of the facts only on my arrival out there. Normally that would have closed the matter. To dictate to Hercule Poirot is sheer impertinence. But the sum offered was so stupendous that for the first time in my life I was tempted by mere money. It was a competence, a fortune. And there was a second attraction. You, my friend. For this last year and a half, I have been a very lonely old man. I thought to myself, why not? I am beginning to weary of this.